Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
That's recording. That means we are back for another episode of Peak Speak. We never say the episode number, and I don't actually know what we're up to.
Yeah, that's exactly why we don't say the episode number, because neither of us fucking know what number we're up to.
I'm curious. I'm going to have a look. We're up to 76, which is actually 77, because I think there's one more yet to be released. No, there's not.
No, there's not. I think this. 76. Yeah. That's why we don't actually know, because we're always like a week ahead.
Yeah.
So yeah, 77, did you say? 76?
76, yeah.
Episode 76.
Welcome to episode 76. Thank you for joining us.
This one's not live because we didn't organize it well enough.
Yeah, the live thing's pretty fun.
Yeah, no, it definitely is.
We're at 85,000 downloads.
Really? That's awesome.
That's cool. Thank you so much to all these people for listening to us 85,000 times.
Or just downloading us and not listening to us. That's also fine too. Like, we prefer it if you listen, but if all you do is download it and boost our stats a little bit, that's fine too.
Yeah, but do the thing. Put it up on your Instagram, tag us so we can share it. Let's get the message out. We want to get 100K before we hit 90 episodes.
Oh, I reckon we can do that. But I'm not sure how, other than to continue doing the poorly planned, mildly well-executed podcast that we've been doing up until this point.
We'll get a few more guests on in the next month or two.
Yeah, I think that's
spice it up for y'all.
Indeed. How are you, my friend? How's life?
Weird.
Yeah, it still is weird, isn't it?
Still a bit weird, yeah. But good. Just putting a lot of time and energy into upgrading the gyms so that when people come back, they'll be coming back to nicer places. I think it's important to reward the loyalty of my members who are keeping us alive right now.
Yeah, for sure, man.
As poor a financial decision as that may be on my behalf, I think it's, I think I'm going to be able to make it work. So,
yeah, nice.
Making things a bit cosmetically nicer, adding a few bits of equipment. In the meantime, just continuing to work on online systems and make things a little bit better in terms of the oil of the machine that is Zero.
Yeah, nice, man.
I've been doing these free webinars. Next week's going to be the last week of that. I'm doing a Q&A on Tuesday, and then I've got Dr. Jordan Shallow joining me to talk stability stuff on Thursday, and that'll be it for the free webinars. And then if there's enough demand, I might do one a month paid to just keep the business alive, because it just continues to drop off as we go through this COVID stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
What about you, man? What's been happening?
So I had to put one of my dogs down last week. That was pretty shit.
Sucks.
Zelda, the English Mastiff, she would turn 7 on Tuesday, I think it was. Had kidney issues their whole life, and it just got to a point where the situation was no longer tenable. So we were fortunate to be able to spend a day with her, and it all happened at home. And, you know, it wasn't the stressful, gross experience that is having to put a dog down in a vet clinic when the dog doesn't like being at the vets. So, you know, we took out of that what we could. It just sucks, man. It really, I've put down a few dogs in my time. I think this one's probably hit me the hardest for a variety of reasons, but it's made for a weird week. So it was a week ago today. And there's definitely been some ups and downs. We're fortunate to still have another dog and a couple of cats. So it's not like the house feels super empty, but also when you have a relatively small house and you no longer have a 50 kilo Mastiff walking around, the house feels a bit empty anyway. So, yeah, man, that's definitely been the worst part of the year. It's been a fucking weird year with fires and then having the gym closed and then having to put down a dog. It's all been a bit shit, but there's also been some good stuff. I just this morning launched our members area on the website for our current members with some like video content, online stuff like that, which has been cool. And it's fucking freezing cold in Canberra today. Mm. I don't know if you can hear Rafiq laughing.
I can. Yeah, he's having a good time.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like going to be 6 degrees or something today. So the first proper cold day we've had. But otherwise, life is as good as life can be in these weird, weird times.
Mm. Yeah, man, I can't begin to imagine the emotional roller coaster that last week has been for you. And I'm here for you, my friend. So anytime you need a chat, just give us a buzz.
I appreciate it.
Tell us about Energy Systems. What have you learned?
Oh yeah. So I've been watching some videos mostly videos from the RP Plus website. So Renaissance Periodization has made their RP Plus members site free, I think, until July.
Cool.
So I signed up just to see what was in there. You know, I think often with those sort of things, if they're free, I like signing up to them just to see what other people are doing in the industry.
For sure.
And when it comes to online nutrition stuff, I don't think you can go any further than RP has. I think they are the pinnacle of a lot of that sort of stuff in terms of their reach and things like that. So I've been watching some lectures from Dr. Jason Miller, I think is his name.
Mm-hmm.
I was an exercise physiology professor and I was watching his bioenergetics one because I've realized in the last little while that my knowledge of anatomy physiology stuff is not as good as it should be. I've been watching a series of lectures. I think it was two or three of them on bioenergetics, so energy systems. And most of it's kind of refresher. I've done some university level anatomy, so I kind of know most of that stuff, or at least thought I knew it. And then, the most interesting part was realizing the mechanism behind the improved cardiovascular fitness, adding to your ability to recover between sets and things like that. Because that's one of those things that I've always said to people. I've always kind of understood, but not realized the mechanism. So your ATP CP system, creatine phosphate system, is that initial burst of energy, that first sort of 10 seconds max effort stuff that relies on creatine phosphate to donate a phosphate to take ADP into ATP and produce the energy. And it was only through this lecture that I realized that the extra phosphate that takes the creatine and rephosphorylates it. Is that the technical term? Yeah, rephosphorylates it, is produced in the mitochondria. So it's aerobically based. And that's where that mechanism makes sense. And that was sort of the one thing that stood out to me. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I understand the mechanism better now. And so now I have a better understanding, which is cool. I'm enjoying being more proactive in my learning. I think in the last couple of years, I've probably let that lapse a little bit, not through a lack of desire, but just through a lack of intent. I've just sort of floated through things, but now I'm a bit more deliberate about learning some stuff and teaching it again, because I think a lot of this stuff I know, but I don't teach very often and therefore don't know it as well. And like you would know this as well as anyone, that
for sure,
the more you teach things like this, the more they become solidified in your understanding and it helps you plug holes in your knowledge and stuff like that. So that's been really interesting.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, learning more is always such a good and such a humbling experience.
Yeah, fucking oath.
Especially with the industry that we're in, where it is so heavily perpetuated by bro science.
Yes.
There's this funny little tightrope you need to walk where as you learn more, it is easy to fall down that trap of confirmation bias and be like, oh, that's why that happens, because your body can do this. And it's like, just because your body can do it doesn't mean it's necessarily doing that in that situation. Mm. So the example that immediately springs to mind for me is like the pathways that each macronutrient can take to be used or stored. So people will be like, okay, well, carbohydrates can be stored as fat. Therefore, we should limit carbohydrate, because excess carbohydrate that doesn't immediately get used for glycogen storage or go into your blood sugar will then be stored as fat. It's like, that's just not as simple as it is. This is where the initial explosion of like ketogenic diets came. And I'm not talking like in the hype years of the last 2 years. I'm talking like Dr. Atkin, you know, 20, 30 years ago. It was like, wait a minute, carbs can go to fat. It's like, yeah, just because they can doesn't mean that they automatically do. It's not as simple as like your body can hold this much carbohydrate and the rest just magically goes to fat. And it's so easy to undermine and underreport the incredible complexity that the human animal is. But at the same time, it's like garnering that understanding to answer questions makes you so much more proficient in your practice. It's like, creatine's a perfect example. It's like, oh, I'm going to load up on creatine. I'm going to do my creatine load like the bottle says, and then I'm going to have 5 grams a day. It's like, well, only use that creatine for those explosive-based movements. And you only train 4 days a week. So all of that excess creatine you're having is literally just getting excreted.
Yeah.
Like you can only store a very limited amount and it's very easy to replenish. Like it's a great system. That's why the creatine monohydrate is such a proficient supplement, because it does its job really well. It's like, but you only need as much as you use. So there's no sense in doing this like overload. You're not hypersaturating cells. It's just not how it works. And having these little nuggets of understanding, like, oh shit, if I am a little bit more fit, those systems are going to be a little bit more efficient. Recovery is going to be a little bit better. Maybe that's the 1%. Maybe you don't even feel it, but it's happening.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems especially prevalent in fitness, the Dunning-Kruger effect, that like the more you know, the more you realize you don't know.
For sure. But
a little bit of knowledge can be really dangerous. And you see it a lot I was guilty of it. And I know plenty of people were, of coaches who get, and we've talked about this ad nauseum before, like you get a bit dogmatic about it. You learn from one area and then you start drinking the Kool-Aid. I know Jamie from Strength Cultures talked about it as well. Like, you know, you go do your PRI course and suddenly you're fucking like PRI everything. It's like, no, actually the most effective and most well-versed coaches I know are the ones who've learnt from everywhere and they've synthesized that knowledge down into a coherent model that then allows them to present their ideas. And I've been watching that and a lot of Dr. Pat Davidson, who we definitely have to have on the podcast at some point, and we know enough people to get him on the podcast. Watching some of his stuff from his Rethinking the Big Patterns lectures, and the quote he uses, I think it's George Box, like, all models are wrong but some are useful. And I think acknowledging that, like, you're actually just wrong a lot of the time, and if you can acknowledge that, that's actually where the real power in it is. Not that you know everything or that you don't know everything, but that, like, your assumptions are probably wrong. And the more you can understand that and realize that it's just this ongoing experiment, I think the better you can be.
Yeah. It's so true. I had a train of thought and I completely lost it through that. I was mesmerized by what you were saying.
Yeah, that's all right. I have that effect on people.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I've been enjoying being more deliberate about my learning. And honestly, the way I've done that is just to say, like, once a month, I'm going to do a lecture for the Burley group on what I've learned this month. And so, like, last month I did one on skeletal muscle and the mechanisms behind contraction and sliding filament theory and all that sort of stuff. And now I'm sort of putting all my thoughts together into, like, understanding movement and principles behind movement and things like that. So
yeah,
it's awesome. Cool, because it's helping me solidify my knowledge, but also like solidifying in a way that I can teach it, because I know I've always understood these things but not necessarily been able to talk someone through my process. Part of it's just like, oh, it just is. It's like, well, no, that's not a good enough fucking answer. And so, yeah, it's been fun. I'm enjoying learning again, which is,
man, cool. And talking people through your process and what you've learned, it forces you to rationalize your own thoughts and come to your own conclusions. It's so easy to, like, gunner a particular idea and just start putting it out there and be like, okay, well, this is what I do now. Without ever being challenged or thinking about it.
Yeah, man.
And that resource, RP Plus, for people listening, like, one of the most common questions I get is like, where have you learned what you know? What resources should I read? And you know, they would be extremely high up on my list, that RP group, especially RP Plus, because it's so, I think a lot of people, and this is probably more the nutrition side of things, ask me, you know, like, oh, I'm thinking of doing a nutrition degree. I'm like, what do you want to do? And they're like, oh, I want to coach people in nutrition. I'm like, don't do a nutrition degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Like, you're going to learn a shitload about chemistry and epidemiology and all the stuff that you don't give a fuck about right now.
Yeah.
So if you want to learn about like sports performance-based nutrition in regards specifically to bodybuilding, powerlifting, strongman, go learn from people who live and breathe that shit
yeah.
and who take the research and who take that, you know, biological understanding and digest it and shit it out to you. That was a terrible analogy.
That was.
who then process it and supply it to you. It's because I was going to say supply to you in a digestible way, and somehow
turns out they just shit information.
Yeah, man, cool. I have to finish a task, and I started the road. I had to finish it.
I'm really sorry. That's great.
But yeah, they really break it down into information that's easy to digest and easy to understand, and that is going to be relevant because you're going to do a 3-year nutrition degree where you don't actually learn anything about, you know, finding someone's caloric intake needs, where you don't learn anything about, you know, prescribing levels of protein, carbohydrates, fats, and how those levels change according to the needs garnered by bodybuilding, powerlifting, strongman. You're not going to learn any of that with a nutrition
degree. How to talk to people about it, or the psychology of the relationship with food, and all of those sort of things that
you would learn that in a dietetics degree. So there's a counseling, there is a medical nutrition therapy. There's a big component of that in dietetics.
Yeah, okay, that's right.
And a lot more of that, nutrition prescription stuff happens in a dietetics degree. However, it is very focused on like medical nutrition therapy. Like, okay, you have chronic diabetes. Here's how we're going to manage it with nutrition. Okay. Yeah. You have chronic heart disease. Here's how we're going to manage it with nutrition. Okay. You're gluten intolerant. Okay. You have a food intolerance of FODMAPs, whatever. You're not going to learn, hey, you're an athlete who competes in bodybuilding. Here's how we're going to manage that. You're not going to learn that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So,
don't waste 4 years and $30,000 on a degree. That's not talking down those degrees. They're absolutely fantastic degrees for their end goal. Your end goal probably doesn't match that if you want to coach people in nutrition and powerlifting or bodybuilding.
Yeah, man. And I think it's the same with like sports and exercise science degrees. A lot of them are geared around rehabilitation and things like that. Like I've met people with 4-year exercise science degrees who don't fucking know anything about coaching or any of that because they have all this great theoretical knowledge, but none of the application that comes with learning, you know, like I've learned far more about how to coach people and what's going to be successful over the last 6 years as a full-time strength coach than I ever would have from a 4-year uni degree, because instead of spending that time passing exams, I'm spending that time helping people get better. And you make mistakes along the way, but you got to make those mistakes eventually anyway. So often the sooner you start with a lot of those things, I think the better you'll be.
Yeah. This concept that we're talking about is so true of so many industries that kind of satellite out from fitness. It's so easy to be like, I'm going to do a physio degree, I'm going to do an osteo degree or whatever to service athletes. It's like, yeah, all the stuff you're going to learn is going to be the base level knowledge that you need. But all that athletic stuff is stuff that you're going to have to learn on your own. If you're going to be, and that again, this is not to discourage anyone from doing higher education, because I think that's really important. I'd strongly encourage you to do that, but don't go into it with illusions of grandeur around fitness and sports performance and stuff like that, because a lot of that is going to have to be self-driven. And if you want to be doing that, you need to be driving yourself towards education now, which kind of circles back to how this conversation started. RP is a fantastic resource for something like that.
Yeah, man. And they've got like basically a whole semester's worth of exercise physiology and anatomy stuff. Mike Isratel's got a 10-part lecture series on arguing to convince people, which I am fucking excited to watch because it's basically like 10 hours of Mike Isratel telling you how to be better at arguing with people.
He's good at it.
And he's fucking excellent at it. So yeah, man, there's heaps of really cool stuff on there. There's like Q&As, there's long form lectures, there's a bunch of stuff. It's really 100% worth checking out.
Mm. Yeah, really cool. And it's fucking cool that they're doing it for free.
Like, yeah, yeah. So I think it's free until the 1st of July, maybe. And
ongoing, like $10 a month US or something.
Yeah, it's not particularly expensive. Yeah. And, you know, that's the great advantage of being a company that scales at such a large level, that you can have a product like that that is such an incredibly high-value product for such a tiny amount of money in the scheme of things.
For sure.
You know, and I think with a lot of this learning stuff, if you want it bad enough, you can learn almost everything you'd get out of a university degree by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You can read textbooks, you can do those things, and it's not the same for sure. But you don't necessarily need that 4-year degree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
So shall we talk about what we're actually going to talk about today?
Yeah. So long-term friend of the podcast. I'm allowed to say that because we are the podcast and he's a long-term friend of ours. But I've been chatting with Will Crozier over the last few days. So Will has been given the opportunity to present in the, I think it's called the OHPS. It's a powerlifting summit with a really like good brains trusted people. Some of the names that John was listing off
before, Mike Isertel,
Zach Couples, Dr. Pat Davidson. So it's going to be a really good
Jordan's
thing.
It's like $10 or $15 again.
$15 US. So yeah. Get on that. It is like extremely good value for money. So check that out. But Will has been invited to present on it and he's going to be talking about longevity. So me and him were having a conversation about this yesterday and we've touched on longevity in the past. But Will had asked me some questions and it really got me thinking. And so when it comes to longevity in the sport of powerlifting, obviously it's extremely multifaceted. There's a lot of things that are going to contribute to people coming and going or staying in the sport. And my belief is that in the last sort of 10 years with the switch to Raw, with the advent of social media, that we've created a system in powerlifting that is actively driving people out of the sport.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. We've seen so many people come and go over the last handful of years that I don't think you could argue very convincingly that it was doing anything other than that.
Mm, yeah, and I mean, don't misinterpret me when I say that. What I mean is that, you know, when we look at the factors that contribute to whether someone stays in the sport, the big ones are going to be general health, like, and I mean that in the context of lifting too. So if you get injured, you're going to leave. Potentially, you know, if you have chronic injuries that keep coming back that you cannot solve, you're going to leave. If you're not making progress, you're going to leave. Like these are some of the main reasons why people leave the sport of powerlifting. And I question whether the advent of social media, the switch to Raw, is driving people to reach that point earlier.
Yeah, I think it definitely, I think it's probably more social media than anything else. I think, although I guess the advent of Raw being such a more prevalent part of the sport means the learning curve is a lot less steep. So I guess you can spend less time learning and more time pushing performance, and that definitely plays a role. But social media, again, for sure, like without a doubt, the desire to get to the point where you can swipe up on your Instagram stories because you lift heaps of weights and you're a sick dude, definitely plays a role in that.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a catch-22 with what you just raised. The barrier to entry is now so much lower. You don't have to learn how to lift in a suit. You don't have to be wearing equipment to be competitive because there is the option to just, you know, come in without equipment. And like you said, that learning process then is now removed. You can just start doing it. And if you're strong, you're going to get stronger. And if you're doing that without looking after yourself, without looking after movement, without looking after health, you're going to beat yourself up really bad. The social media thing is a big one. You know, in the past, if you wanted to know whether a 1,000-pound squat was possible, you either waited till Worlds or you sat by your letterbox and waited for a, you know, power magazine, a a USA Powerlifting or whatever that magazine was called to arrive to see what was possible. Yep. Now it's just like anytime someone does something big within 20 seconds, it's on Instagram, it's on someone's story, it's on someone's feed, it's on Powerlifting Motivation, it's bouncing around, it's being shared around. So you constantly see the boundaries being pushed further and further and further up. You know, even in our short time in the sport, in our sort of 10 to 15 years, the difference between like waiting to see what happens at Battle of Champions, and hoping that a video pops up on YouTube or hoping a compilation of the top deadlifts gets thrown together. That was our way of
a stream that actually kind of maybe worked for more than 10 seconds.
I can't even remember streams back then, man.
Maybe it was Super Cup. I definitely saw, like, remember watching some really terrible skippy streams for Super Cup of Titans that Yarrambash walks out and then it freezes and then Yarrambash walks back off again and you don't actually get to see any of the lifting. Yeah, or you sit there and watch a live scoreboard.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't actually tell you that much either.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like look at things like, you know, Eddie Cohen's records and then, you know, Pozdeev pulling 400 at 100 kilos and that kind of, that stuff hung around for ages. And then it's like, you know, Tom Martin 400, Kayla Willen 420, and then Jamal 440, and Kayla pushing up to 440. Like, it's just, you see what's possible, and it's just push, 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 push. And I question whether, you know, seeing what's possible drives people to push harder, to train harder, to use gear harder, and effectively drive themselves out of the sport by doing it so rapidly that your body can't keep up. I think there's a big part of that. And there's pressure, like that's talking about it globally. There's pressure at a local level. It's like you see all these people coming to Pro Roar and squatting 300 kilos. Like a 300 kilo minimum squat would have been unheard of 6 years ago.
Yeah, man. It's
like a 95 kilo class.
The speed at which the top level of performance has improved is phenomenal. Like I can't think of another sport that I've been involved in where, and I think it probably has to do with the number of people in the sport and the talent pool, you know, like the talent pool is now bigger because powerlifting is now way more accessible than it ever has been before, thanks to things like CrossFit, which, you know, put barbells in the hands of a generation of people that wouldn't have had barbells in their hands otherwise. Because there are people like you and I who've been lifting weights for 10 or 15 years and competing and doing all those sort of things. But most of the people like I coach, most of the people that are members of my gym haven't been in it for that long. You know, they've picked it up inside the last decade and they've picked it up often because of something like CrossFit or because of the accessibility of it or things like that, or they've fallen into it. You know, they've fallen into like, hey, I want to get a bit fitter and healthier and stronger, and this lifting weights thing is fun, and let's like maybe try competing in it. And then suddenly it's this big snowballing effect. But I think the more you can talk to people about it, and the more we can have this conversation about like, hey, it doesn't have to be a 3-year sport. You know, if you do it well, I think it can be a multi-decade long career, but it comes and goes. I think that's been the most obvious point for me, for the people that I know that have been in this sport for longer than 10 years, is almost all of them have peaks and troughs. Like, that's the nature of it, right? Over a 10-year career, you're going to have some good years and you're going to have some bad years. And I think the people who are emotionally stable enough to deal with those ups and downs and also appreciate that, like, life changes, your priorities change. You know, like, I have a 2-year-old and a business to run. Like, my priority for competing is not anywhere near what it was 6-7 years ago. And that's okay. Like, I'll be back on the platform at some point because I still love it and I still thoroughly enjoy the process, but my priorities have changed. And it doesn't mean I'm done with the sport forever, because it's so closely entwined in how I make a living and, you know, what my passions are and all those sort of things, that it'll never go away. But not everyone's fortunate enough to be in the situation that I'm in. And I think, it's not talked about enough. Everyone's talking about how quickly can I get strong, or how quickly can I get to something like pro raw? Like, oh, I want to qualify for pro raw next year. Well, maybe there aren't enough coaches having honest discussions with lifters about like, hey, maybe you're not good enough to qualify for pro raw next year or for nationals or something like that. And maybe what you need to do is look at it 2 years from now or 3 years from now. And that ability to put away instant gratification and allow yourself to naturally evolve as a lifter over the course of months and years is a powerful skill that I think a lot of people in powerlifting lack. The foresight to know that the work you're doing now is laying the foundation for you being at your strongest 5 years from now, which again is an easy conversation for you and I to have because we've been in it for so long.
But if
you've only been in it for 6 months and two of those months you've been injured, it can seem pretty shit and be sort of hard to see the long-term view of things.
I think a hard thing as well for up-and-coming lifters is that you're looking at the lifters above you and you're desperate to be on that level and you're willing to train hard and work hard to get to that level. And sometimes it undermines the time that it's taken that person to get to that level.
Yeah.
The people that are at the top and the people that are lifting massive amounts of weight have been building up slowly for years and years and years. So it's easy to look at like a Will Crozier, you know, deadlifting in the high threes, deadlifting 380 something. You know, it's easy to forget that 5 years ago his deadlift was 330. So he's only added 50 kilos. What I say only, he's added 50 kilos to his deadlift in 5 years, 10 kilos a year on average. You know, that puts it into perspective. Like if you're deadlifting 260 now, don't expect to be deadlifting 320 next year. Yep. Like that progress would be too rapid. You know, give it the time that it's going to take. And if you're committed to the sport, you'll be willing to put in that time. I think reshaping people's views of what a good rate of progress is something that we have a responsibility to do as coaches, because too many people are like, yep, I'm going to squat 300. It's like, whoa, hang on, bro. Why don't we squat 220 first?
Yeah, yeah.
And then 225.
Yeah.
Then maybe 230 after that. Like, let's work on getting you a little bit stronger before we look at turning you into a fucking monster.
Yeah. Or maybe like just squat 220 better. Like, you know, like sometimes that I think gets lost in it as well. And we've talked about this before as well, that like the measure of progress isn't just that number on the bar. And I think that's what drives people to push beyond that. Like we've talked about it multiple times, especially even recently, but this idea that, yeah, you're only measuring your progress by your success on a platform or your total going up or the numbers on the bar going up. Like, yeah, that's a measure of progress, but it's not the only measure of progress. And I think the people that understand that the most are the ones who are going to be in this sport for a very long time. And the nature of the sport is the people who are in it for the longest are probably the strongest.
I think a big part is just recognizing that, like, if you're keen on this sport, your desire to compete in the sport is not going to go away until there are psychological roadblocks that prevent that from happening, whether that comes from injuries or this kind of self-defeating mindset circle where you're like, oh, so-and-so is better than me, so-and-so is stronger than me, rather than just continuing to chip away. I can speak to this quite personally. You know, there was a time where I was pretty good lifting, like for my weight class, you know, nationwide. And then, you know, as lifting became less and less a priority, when it came to coaching and trying to be the best was put more into coaching than into lifting. You know, I kind of drifted away from that a little bit. That's never stopped me from training and grinding to get better. And now I'm confident that within the next 2 years, I'll be up there again. Like I was planning to compete this year and I would have been very confident to go over like 930 raw. And I intend to do that. Or as soon as I can compete again, it's just about like, you know, 5 years ago, my total was in the sevens. And it's just creeping up slowly, 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 just pushing away, grinding away, doing that in kind of, you know, in the background, because I know that if I keep grinding, I keep getting stronger, you know, that's going to keep chipping up and up and up and up. And the people that are grinding really hard and wanting to get stronger really fast are going to be the people that break, that miss out on competitions, or that leave the sport.
Yep.
It's a game of time. Yeah, of course, you know, you need to put work in and blah, blah, blah. But you really, the time part of the recipe is often the ingredient that people are missing.
Yeah, 100%.
Not giving enough value to.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, what's your fucking rush? Like, I don't see the point in trying to be the best powerlifter in the next 2 years. Because, like, then what the fuck are you going to do? Because then you're going to be this person who doesn't move very well, because the only way you could be very good at powerlifting is to completely compromise every other physical capacity in order to improve your ability to squat, bench, and deadlift. And then you compromise your health and your relationships. And suddenly 3 years from now, like, yeah, you might be a good powerlifter, but you've got no friends and everything hurts. And then you fucking hate powerlifting. And now what do you do with your life? Like, yeah. And I've fucking seen that thing, that cycle, in probably hundreds of people. And to be honest, most of them tend to be younger. Like, I think it's the early 20s, mid-20s people who are still finding their feet in life who find something like powerlifting and cling to it as an identity. And again, we've talked about this a million times, this idea that you are not your goals going on your tombstone. We probably don't have much in common. Yeah, like, I love powerlifting. I live for all of that, but it's not the only facet of my life. It's not the only facet of my identity. And I think part of that definitely comes from maturity and time. Like, I learned that because it was at one point, and I watched all those people around me fall down because they didn't have anything else. And powerlifting is great. I fucking love powerlifting. I will always love the sport. But it's not the only thing in life. And I think if you can have some sort of balance, like watching Crozier sit on a spin bike and improve his cardiovascular fitness because his heart's too weak to pump blood through his traps to actually get to his brain. Like, I get that. And the fact that someone who's at such a high level takes the time out of his otherwise hectic training schedule to revert back to, like, the things that matter from a longevity standpoint is super powerful. I think people like that leading by example is what we need in the sport. You know, we need people who are at the top having this discussion that, like, hey, powerlifting's great, but I want to do this forever. And I don't think social media facilitates that conversation very well.
Yeah, I think it's always important to do a bit of self-reflection and ask yourself a few questions. When did you start lifting? Ask yourself, when are you going to stop lifting? You don't have a planned end date, guarantee it.
Yeah.
Ask yourself, do you want to be stronger in a year's time? Guarantee you want to be stronger. And then ask yourself, is powerlifting going to be there when you want to be stronger? Yes, it will be. There's going to be another comp. Powerlifting is going to keep going. Your lifting is going to keep going. You don't have to be in a rush. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to get strong fast. Like, I mean, that's essentially what coaching is. It is a shortcut to getting stronger faster. That's what we're here for. But it's just taking that reality check of, like, how fast is fast? If you can make a significant improvement, like, you know, I don't want to put a kilo figure on it, but a 3 to 5% improvement on a lift in a year, if you're an experienced lifter, you are killing it.
Yeah, fucking nice.
Extrapolate that over a few years, you've made a significant improvement on your total.
Yep.
Like a 5% improvement on a 900 kilo total, you know, that's a lot of weight.
Yeah, fucking oath, man.
To be adding in a year.
And it's that measure makes it hard to see sometimes. Like, when you're like, oh, over the last 6 months, I only put 2.5 kilos on my squat. It's like, yeah, but over the last 4 years, you put 55 kilos on your squat. Like, that's where sometimes that's where I think actually social media is really powerful. One of my favorite things is when memories pop up in my Facebook feed of people that I've been coaching for a long time, you know, like 3 or 4 years. And you can tag them and be like, hey, remember that time when you could only squat 40 and now you squat 180? Like, oh, isn't that fucking cool? And like, oh yeah, that perspective where it's easy to look back. It's hard to look back a long way and see just how far you've come. You know, like, fuck, man, I remember benching 100 for the first time. And that wasn't that long ago. Bench is stupid anyway. But but like, I remember those things, you know. I remember those first comps where, like, and that it doesn't seem like that long ago, but when you look at it, like, I did my first comp in 2010. It's hard to have that perspective without the ability to reflect on yourself. And I think it's that self-awareness, that ability to just, like, check your own ego every now and again, that isn't easy. It's not very easy to teach either. Some people just seem to have it and some people don't.
Mm.
But I've also had conversations like over the course of 6 months with a person where we've had basically the same conversation once a month for 6 months. And then after 6 months, they come to me like, all right, cool. I get it now. Let's do this way.
Mm.
All right, cool. Like I wasn't going to give up on you because I knew you'd come around eventually. It's just about slowly changing beliefs and slowly questioning your ideas about why you think you need to be where you are or why you think you need to get to where you're going or where you want to go quickly.
Mm.
What's the rush? You got plenty of time.
What's the rush? We'll end it on that note.
Works for me.
Perfect. All right.
That's about it from me. That's
about as much effort we're going to put into the sign up. Follow us, like us, put us on Instagram. We love that shit.
We do. We do indeed.
See you next time.
Goodbye.
Bang.